Well, joining us on In Conversation, a Rugby Pass podcast today with Scotty Stevenson is none other than Sir Brian Williams, BG. Good day to you, a happy new year to you, and how are you?
Good, Sumo, and happy new year to you and all the listeners. Yeah, I'm very good, thank you.
Thank you very much, Sir Brian. Look, first of all, let's cover the knighthood. What a moment for you, and richly deserved, may I add.
No, thank you, Sumo. You call me BG, mate. All my mates do, and you're my mate. But, that was a special occasion for sure. And, I guess you live your life, and sometimes these things come along. And, it was a big thrill at the time, for sure.
Oh, you're humble to the end, BG. You're humble to the end. Mate, today, the purpose of today really is just to have a conversation with you about what rugby has meant to you, some of your experiences of the game. And I think among your generation, Brian, you hold such a unique position in some of the things that you in particular have experienced and the pathways that you have forged. Did you think about it as a young man, Brian, that you would be as trailblazing as you were as a rugby player and as a member of the All Black side?
No, not really, Sumo. I think... It was always a great dream to be an All Black and to play at the highest level. But you just take one game at a time. And back in those days, we played club rugby and then provincial rugby and then international rugby. And, if you were fortunate enough to climb through the ranks, then you had the sort of careers that I was able to have at international level, all the travel, all the mates, all the wonderful experiences that we had. But at the same time, the game was amateur and we had to forge our own lives to make sure we earned enough money to live.
Yeah, well, exactly right. It was very different, mate. And I don't need to point out your career to you because it was quite something. 113 All Black matches, 38 test matches among those 75 games for the All Blacks, 71 points. In tests and 330 in All Black games. But for most people, even though you'd made that Auckland side in the late 60s as an 18-year-old, it was that 1970 tour that really put you firmly, not just on New Zealand's radar, BG, but on the world's radar. Your memories of that tour, and not just on the field, but everything politically that swirled around your involvement on that tour.
Well, it was a very daunting time, I've got to say. And I've said it before, not only for the fact that I was a new All Black and obviously playing alongside people I'd grown up idolising, the Colin Meads and Brian Lahores and Ian Kirkpatrick and so many other great names of the 1960s. So that was one thing. But on the other hand, the fact that I was one of the first four players of coloured blood, for want of a better term, to be selected to go to South Africa. So apartheid obviously was a great concern, certainly for me. And I've said it before again, that when the plane touched down in Johannesburg, I had this panic attack. Suddenly it all hit me. What was going to happen next? What fate was going to befall me, once you go into apartheid South Africa? So, but in the event, I took one step after the other and suddenly I was playing my first game and scoring my first try and then I was away, really.
Were you aware, and I guess you were, otherwise you wouldn't be having a panic attack, but were you aware of the significance of you being on that tour and what roads that might pave for others in later times?
I don't think I was aware of it. I was a law student, so I like to think that I had a social conscience, shall I say. But you didn't quite realise the significance of it all. And I guess as time went by, we had that fateful 1981 Springbok tour, and then Nelson Mandela obviously becoming being released from Robben Island and then becoming president of South Africa. So I guess it was only in later life that you realise the significance of, it just created a small dent in the armoury of apartheid that they were willing to accept four of us as the first coloured players to go to South Africa, and that certainly did have its impact down the line.
Mm. The career, as we mentioned before, was significant for so many reasons, BG, not just your ability to score tries, but the way the All Blacks played the game in those years. I look through that first test team in Pretoria on that 1972, and names like Fergie McCormack, Dick Thorne, McRae, Cottrell, Laidlaw, Lahore, Kirkpatrick, Strahan, Smith, Muller, Hopkinson. I mean, these were big names, and they were tough men, a lot of them. But it was a very mixed team for its time, wasn't it, when you consider the likes of you and Chris Laidlaw, who were very studious men, university men, and the likes of BJ Lahore, also now Sir Brian Lahore, who was much more a country man, dyed in the wool. Did you enjoy the mix of people? Because you had grown up in urban Auckland.
Yeah, well, I did enjoy it, but I wasn't probably aware so much of the differences. As I mentioned, they were my heroes, and that was a difference. I was just a novice, a little kid from Polynesian kid from Auckland, and these were my heroes. So that was the biggest difference. But as time went by, you start to realise that we're definitely all from different necks of the woods, and it's how you all come together. You know, the common bond is doing the best for the All Blacks, doing the best for New Zealand.
Mm.
And that does bind you together. Mm. But I think as time goes by, you realise that, you know, Griz Wiley and me, for example, were like chalk and cheese.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we became great mates and still are, but just from totally different lifestyles.
Yeah, I want to go forward 8 years, and I know I'm cutting out a lot of time here, BG, in your career, because there's so much more to discuss about the All Blacks, but there are other things that I think are just as important to you and your life. But I think about who you started playing with, and then your final test, which was against Scotland, part of the Grand Slam winning All Blacks side of 1978, the first time the All Blacks had achieved that. There had been an almost entire turnover of the playing roster, apart from you. You were pretty much the sole survivor from that 1970 era through into 78.
Yeah, well, you're right, I guess. And you know, the 1970 team after that tour, most of the players who carried the All Blacks through a pretty successful era of the 1960s all retired.
Mm.
So I found myself, you know, 1971 for the Lions tour, one of the more experienced players in the back line. You know, that was pretty hard to deal with at the time. And by 1978, as you say, many of the players who played in 1970 were long gone. Mm. And in fact, I think they're all long gone. And so many of my contemporaries of the early 70s as well.
Mm. Well, I mean, it was a stunning career. But then, of course, you enjoyed a law career for a long time as well, BG. But one thing you never lost was your affiliation to club and the time you spend and still spend with the Ponsonby Club. I think that's what most of us treasure you for, how much you've given back to that level of our game. Were you aware that was something you wanted to do, or was it something you felt you had to do?
Oh, it was definitely something I wanted to do. Ponsonby was in my blood and in my bones, you know, family affiliations and many of the people I'd grown up with and many of the people I respected were Ponsonby members. So it was very easy to stay involved. And I've got to say that the main reason is that I thoroughly enjoy it. I enjoy all the interaction that goes on between the different age groups and the different ethnic groups. And club rugby is just, you know, tops as far as I'm concerned. You've got players from all different walks of life, different abilities, different sizes, all coming together. And when you all get together on Saturday night at the club, after a successful or an unsuccessful day, there's nothing like it. I love it.
Family's been very big for you, mate, as well, and your family have also gone on to forge their own rugby careers. Your boys have. You know, did you always imagine that the boys would follow in your footsteps in terms of footy?
Well, I guess I hoped they would. possibly put a bit of pressure on them early, but I soon learnt, Sumo, that I was a bit, and Leslie, my darling wife, also assured me that keeping my mouth shut was probably the best option. And so I learned that relatively early in their careers. I used to offer advice, and the boys would say, "Shut up, Dad, what do you know?"
Yeah.
And and I've got to say, once I learned to keep my mouth shut, our relationship's improved, and we're still great mates nowadays. But Leslie, my wife, has been, you know, part of the journey.
Yeah.
All my rugby journey at the top level, we started going out when we were 17 years old. So she's been very much part of the journey and still is.
Yeah, well, she's a remarkable lady, of course, and that support, especially in your era of the game, BG, it would have been tough. Unpaid, away on tour for long months on end. How did the families get by in those All Black teams?
Well, you're right. The clubs, and particularly in the early tours, used to, you know, band together and raise funds for you in a strictly amateur era, which probably was against the rules, but that was turned a blind eye to. But generally speaking, it was, you know, particularly in my later tours, there wasn't that sort of support coming from the club and elsewhere, so you had to make ends meet. And I was fortunate in my early legal career to have an employer who helped me out. Ern Wright, his name was, and then later on, my partner Kevin McDonald also had to, you know, sort of hold the fort while I was away. So I had great support, and Leslie was also she was teaching through part of that as well. So she was able to earn some income as well. But as you say, amateur era, you just got to make ends meet.
Your connection with the game is so strong, and as a rugby player, that's one thing that defines you, but also your Samoan heritage defines you. What was it like to be a young kid of Samoan heritage growing up in Auckland the time you did?
Well, it was interesting time. It wasn't very fashionable to be an Islander in New Zealand in those days, and in fact, there was probably a bit of a stigma attached to being an Islander, So what I'm particularly proud about is the fact that, you know, the young Polynesian rugby players and netballers and rugby league players and many of the sports people have helped break down that sort of stigma over the course of time, and to the point now where, you know, most of our sports are certainly... There are many Polynesians playing the game at the top level, and it's very much part of the scene now, but it certainly wasn't when I started.
No, exactly right. And those of us in New Zealand will understand the various racist policies of our government during the time and through the 70s and dawn raids. And you would have lived that, BG, and in your humanitarian capacity and your capacity as a citizen of island heritage, that would have been a particularly trying time as well.
Yeah, it was a trying time, no doubt about that. And you know, when one considers the history of Samoa New Zealand relations and the various things that have gone on in the past, it was very hard to take. But you know, that was the way it was, and you could protest as much as you like, and but the government was the government, and that was their policy. So. We just had to make do.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting for me. I mean, I'm a young male of bug-out descent, so I don't understand how tumultuous that must have been for you. And I don't think many people of my ethnicity would. But the fact is, I think, BG, if I can put words in your mouth, you were able to compartmentalise different parts of your life, your law career, your rugby career, your cultural identity. You've always been able to make sure that each is in its place at the appropriate time.
Yeah, you're right, Sumo, and I guess it is a trait of mine to compartmentalise, as you say. I I sort of think of my life in terms of compartments or chapters, and I like to, you know, finish that thing and then put it away, and finish that thing and put it away. And I guess it's one of the other key words in my life is being balanced, you know, just getting the balance right. Sometimes things go for you and sometimes they don't. And when they don't, you have to figure out ways to, you know, set things right and straight again. And as I say, that's been my philosophy for many years.
I do want to touch on one other thing about your playing days, Speedy, before I talk more about your subsequent life and certainly in the last couple of decades, administratively, coaching and through your philanthropic work. But were there players that did and still do stand out for you, whether they were on your side or against you, that just stick in your mind still to this day?
Well, there are so many iconic figures, from my career, and I guess the people I grew up idolising, Sir Colin Meads, Sir Brian Hoare, Sir John Graham, people of that nature, Walker Nathan, and so many others, players who became larger-than-life figures, and just great people. They weren't just great players, they were great people, and they all got involved in really good causes. And I guess that was one of the hallmarks of amateur rugby, particularly, that your philosophy wasn't about me. It was about, what could we do for our community? What could we do for our country? And I think that served all of us well. Lots of people say to me nowadays, Sumo, you know, if you played in the professional era, you'd be a wealthy man. Well, I feel as if I am a wealthy man. I haven't got a huge amount of money, but I've got enough to get by on. But just the fact that you live a full and meaningful life and you know, so many values and standards that you learn along the way really enhance your life. And I guess that's one of the things I feel for the young professional players today, that they need to get that balance in their lives. They need to make sure that rugby is not the be-all and end-all. They need other things to go on to after their rugby career is over. So I'm happy with my lot. I made no money playing the game, but had a huge amount of fun, and I got a lot of life lessons out of it.
Yeah, I don't think all the money in the world could buy the memories that you made on the rugby field, BG, that's for sure. But look, coaching was another big part of your life, and you coached with Maurice Trapp, who was a wonderful coach in his own right with Auckland throughout that 80s period, and with your Ponsonby club. But you also went on to coach Manu Samoa, and I know you got a victory at a World Cup in 99 over Sir Graham Henry's Wales team. So I'm sure you still rib him gently about that.
Well, I do rib him gently about that, and sometimes not so gently. that was a special highlight. But no, I really enjoyed my coaching career as well. It's a hazardous occupation, as all coaches will tell you. You're just waiting to be sacked, really. I was rather fortunate that didn't happen to me too often, but I coached with really great guys. Lynn Colling initially at Ponsonby, and then Maurice Trapp, and I've coached with other guys as well. And I guess looking at my coaching career, I've probably enjoyed the role as an assistant coach rather than the head coach, although I have been a head coach as well. But no, those were great days and some great teams. That great Auckland team of the early and late 80s and into the 90s. I mean, that was fantastic. And all of those players, I've got to say, once again, in the amateur era, they've all gone on to really meaningful lives. And that's, again, one of the hallmarks, I think, of the amateur rugby era.
BG, I want to touch on something that you've been involved with a lot of passion over the last few years, and that's the New Zealand Rugby Foundation, which is designed to support players who have had life-changing injuries in the game. Do you draw significant satisfaction from your role with such an important organisation?
Well, I do. I certainly enjoy being able to help out. Obviously, it's a bittersweet scenario when young people are struck down like they are. But what I'm particularly proud about is that rugby people are looking after their own. And, you know, you look back at Sir Colin Meads was our patron, and Sir John Graham, and many of the rugby greats of the past have gotten themselves involved with the New Zealand Rugby Foundation because we want to help out. Those are our family, and whenever you have, you know, your family members are struck down, everyone rallies around and tries to do the best they can to help out. And so, I enjoy that part.
BG, I just want to go back to the beginning now and talk again once more briefly about your playing career, because I know you were most often described as the Samoan with the thunderous thighs, but I think Luke McAllister might have taken your record there at some stage, buddy. But the physical attributes that you brought to the game, they seem to be, to me, they were very different to what most players in your position possessed at the time. Did you feel different in the way you were put together and the way you could perform athletically?
Interesting question, Sumo, but I guess I did. I knew I possessed a sidestep particularly. That was one of my main attacking weapons, and I'd been an athlete. I knew I had the speed, but when I was growing up, and particularly at first 15 level, I thought I was becoming too big, and I used to worry about the big thighs and the big backside, and we used to do the weightlifting, and I used to wonder whether I was doing the right thing by doing the weightlifting. But ultimately, I think all those things actually paid off for me, and it created an athlete that probably was a wee bit different for the time, and hence it created my reputation, I suppose.
Yeah, well, you're ahead of your time there, BG, and you're still ahead of your time in everything you do, and it's been a great pleasure to chat to you today. Thank you for all of your contributions to New Zealand's national game, and I know we're going to see plenty more of you before you've emptied the tank. So, Brian Williams, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Sumo. All the best.
There you go, Sir Brian Williams, one of the great All Blacks, joining us on In Conversation, a Rugby Pass podcast. While we await the return of the short ball, you can catch it all on rugbypass.com.